Testing. Senate Committee on Education, Wednesday, April 14th, 1999, 1 p.m., hearing room B. Senator Tom Hartzell, Chair.
Education Committee, and the first order of business is a work session on Senate Bill 756. Senator Courtney.
Yes, I'm going to dash to amendment 756, please. I'd ask if you would, Mr. Chair, if the second is.
Yes,
Committee Administrative Agency to those amendments.
The dash two amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, simply take the PERS and the PERS out of the bill. That's the only change.
And I must say that we've been working with the parties, and we're pretty much there, both in terms of whose bill we're going to use. You know how that goes, Mr. Chair. That's an issue. The Treasurer's Office we've worked with, other different parties. And any technical other changes needed might be made can be picked up in the House, and that's the way they're not substantive changes. But it's time to either, you know, paint or get off the ladder.
Right.
You know how that is.
Cut a fish bait.
Well, I don't believe there's a fish that's ever been caught because I've never caught one, but I have painted. So it's time to paint and get off the ladder.
Okay.
Well,
you want to exercise things, so I won't ask for next
time. Yeah,
I don't.
The dash two amendments. Is there any objection to that, gentlemen?
It's called trust and holding.
Ordered.
I'm here to court me. I move Senate Bill 756 as amended the floor with a due pass recommendation, please.
And part of the motion should be that we will rescind the passage to revenue.
Yeah, that's right.
Go directly to the floor. Everybody understand the motion?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And in case you need to know, you do have a financial fiscal analysis of proposed legislation should be in front of you that speaks to $50,000. So that, right, Dan, it's all there because we studied that one too. This is the college savings loan, you know, program where people are trying to invest in kids' college savings. You probably remember the issue. I'm not trying to.
Don't oversell it.
I'm not trying.
Is there any further questions? The clerk will call the roll on sending Senate Bill 756 as amended by dash 2, rescinding the move to revenue and directly to the Senate floor. Those are in favor of the eyes in the floor. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney.
Oh, yes.
Senator
Denton.
Aye.
Senator
Zell. Aye.
Chair
Hunter. Aye. Motion is passed. We'll close the work session on 756 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1091. And first, Jim Torrey, please. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Mayor. It's a pleasure. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Hartung and members of the committee, with your approval, I'd like to bring two people from the University of Oregon that have been involved with this project to sit with me.
Certainly.
Deborah Simmons from the University of Oregon and Ed Kamehanui from the University of Oregon. And I'll make some opening remarks, and then I'm going to ask them to make some comments also. For the record, my name is Jim Torrey. I'm the mayor of the city of Eugene, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 1091, the ready-to-read pilot program. Why would the mayor of the city of Eugene be such an active supporter of a program like this? I want to tell you that I have become more and more of a supporter of the need for early reading readiness over these last 2 years, and specifically, I'll point out that in the city of Eugene and in the city of Springfield, we put together a task force of people to try to identify gaps in programs for young people who were at risk or could become at risk in our community. And one of the things that we did was to go out and talk to young people in our community about why they may not be in school, if that were in fact the case. We talked to broad ranges of young people in the school system, both the middle school and the high school, tried to identify in talking to them what some of the key points were in terms of when they started to lose interest in their educational situation. We identified juvenile crime risk factors, and rather than go through all of them, I will indicate to you that, to me, the two most important ones are the importance of a strong family support system, and secondly, school failure. Those two risk factors in combination can almost assure you that 75 to 80% of those young people are going to be getting in some sort of trouble in the future. So then we sat down to try to identify programs in our community that we thought could help in dealing with those situations. And we started with a full complement of programs, starting with Healthy Start and supporting the county commissioners in their efforts to generate funds for this area. We are supporters of Head Start and after-school programming and finding ways to assist young people who have already dropped out of school and finding their way back into school. And I have stepped over the issue of early learning to read kids. This year, in the first 3 months of this year, I have personally read in 47 kindergarten classes in the city of Eugene. And don't look at me and say that that must have been a lot of work. That was absolutely the most fun and the most interesting thing I've done as the mayor of the city of Eugene. These young children come to those schools enthusiastic, ready to learn. And as a teacher from Fairfield Grade School told me, which is one of our lower income schools in Eugene, she said, you know, we have these little kids that come to our school with their basket of life skills. Some of their baskets are not very full. Some of them are full with great family situations and support. Some of them are full of some experiences that no five-year-old should ever have had to go through. But the fact is there's a divergence of basic support that has been made available to these children up to the point when they are in kindergarten. And I come to the conclusion that the one time when all of us as governmental policymakers can get together is the first time these young people come into our school system. We have an opportunity to equalize the playing field. We have an opportunity to identify those that have weaker skills. We have an opportunity to provide assistance and support to these young people. I'm not an expert. We have some people sitting with me today that are experts. They are recognized as experts not only in the city of Eugene, they're recognized across the country. They've been asked to work with the state of California in developing their early reading readiness programs. They've been asked to work with the people in Texas. We have the responsibility and the opportunity to assist in these young people's lives. Now, this program is a special program, and I'm not being selfish when I say this. It is one of the two school districts in the city of Eugene. 4J is the larger school district. Bethel is the smaller school district. And by the way, the 4J people are supportive of this program, even though the dollars would go into this one district as a pilot project. Why Eugene? Why Bethel? Why the University of Oregon? We have an outstanding higher education facility that has the capability to provide resources and research-based information to us. I think we ought to take advantage of it. These people have developed an assessment program to assess kindergartners in their first year of public school to determine which ones of these young people will be having problems with reading. And I'll let them describe how they do that. We don't know how much money the legislature is going to push forward for education in this state. But we do know, at least reading all of the stories that I've read in the newspapers, that it isn't going to be as much as some people would indicate that they need to have the optimum level of educational opportunity. This program provides an opportunity on a trial basis, on a demonstration basis, to try something. And if it works, I think we have the ability then to transfer the knowledge of this program and to be able to use it statewide. I would hope that we would not wait to the end of the third grade to determine that our children can't read. It would be my hope that we would do everything we can before they get to the third grade to ensure that 90 to 95% of them meet the standards that we have put in place in this state. And I'll close my comments by indicating that children learn to read from kindergarten through third grade. From the fourth grade on, they read to learn. If we're not prepared to assist them to make that transition from having learned to read to learning to read and learning the subjects that reading provides them the opportunity to learn, I think we've shortchanged them. And I would hope that this committee could see its way clear to assisting us in trying to get the dollars that are needed to put in place this demonstration project. And with that, I would like to ask Ed Kananui to describe how this program would work.
Thank you, Walt. And the committee, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ed Kananui. I teach at the University of Oregon, and it's a distinct privilege to be here and to speak on behalf of this particular bill. As Mayor Torrey indicated, schools are absolutely unforgiving after grade 3, and it's not intended. Schools don't intend to be unforgiving after third grade. In fact, it has nothing to do with schools per se. Obviously, they get a lot of support. But the symbol system, the requirements we place on students after third grade are enormously demanding. And as Mayor Torrey noted, kids in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and so on, start to learn what's called the alphabetic writing system, and they start to learn to read. But after they, once they apprehend and are able to negotiate that system, they have to move into reading to learn. They're faced with social studies, a lot of heavy content, unfamiliar vocabulary, and so on. So kids aren't on track and aren't on a positive trajectory after third grade. Their ability to be successful in school diminishes significantly. In fact, in one study, for example, that was conducted several years ago, a researcher from the University of Virginia asked a very simple question. If I'm a first grader and I'm a poor reader in grade 1, what's the likelihood that I'll be a poor reader, even with schooling, in grade 4, at the end of grade 4? The probability was 0.88. In other words, even with schooling, kids will have an enormously difficult time being able to negotiate this writing system called the alphabetic writing system. For lots of kids, they have a difficult time figuring out the symbol system. So it's imperative that we provide the support early on so that they can and are able to negotiate the symbol system so that when they move into fourth grade, they can take on the information, learn the science facts, learn about machines and friction and so on so that they can negotiate this. I was privileged to participate in Superintendent Bunn's initiation last week, and where he launched his reading initiative called Reading Together. And I think this particular bill would be helpful in that what it would do is establish a model that would allow school districts around the state of Oregon to really witness how you do this. Schools are complex host environments. They are made up of people, policies, practices, pedagogies, and so on. It's enormously difficult to pull all of these things together so that we can get kids on track. What this bill will allow us to do is to use Bethel School District at a school district level to be able to demonstrate that we can do this. We have technology in place, for example, that will tell us whether or not the vital signs of reading are acceptable, are on an appropriate track, for example. For example, we can measure right now whether or not if kids can hear certain sounds, if they can play with words and pull words apart, their inability to do that in a one-minute kind of fluency test will tell us whether or not they're at risk for later reading deficiencies and difficulties down the road. We can do that in kindergarten now. In a sense, what we can do is check their vital signs in kindergarten, and these measures are robust enough that it will tell us whether or not that child will be at risk by grade 3. So it just seems to me it makes more enormous sense to try and identify these kids with these measures early in kindergarten and then provide the kind of anchored instruction at the school building level with continuous progress monitoring that allows us to make sure that we're intervening in a very effective and successful manner. So that's one big piece of this. And we're privileged to work with Bethel School District. We're privileged to be in Eugene, where all of the school districts are very effective in terms of their leadership. But Bethel has, I think, in place leadership at the district level that is committed to this. We have leadership at the building level that is committed to this. There's a culture of assessment in place where they're taking data on kids to try and monitor this. We've made an investment here, and I think it'll be on the right trajectory to support this. And I'm going to defer to my colleague, Dr. Deb Simmons, to talk more about this particular project. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Deborah Simmons, Associate Professor at the University of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Ready to Read proposal and bill. It's been my privilege to work with the Bethel Central Administration and the six primary elementary schools in that district for the last 2 years, and also in the last year to work with Mayor Tory and to witness his tenacious spirit and an investment in this important project. The ultimate question that I think we're trying to answer is, how does public education address the diversity of needs that kindergarten children bring to Oregon schools, and to do it in a way that ensures that all children benefit and that all children are reading by grade three? And in this particular bill, we're really looking at dollars to support and augment what's currently happening for a very specialized group of children who are not adequately benefiting from the early intervention in kindergarten and first grade, and to try to support that, to demonstrate what is possible when there are resources, when there's this convergence of political will as well as need as well as expertise and commitment. So that's the unique position that I think we find ourselves in. And I suppose there are at least three planks that are necessary to work on the solution, and granted there are many more. And some of this is very much in complement to what my colleague Ed Kamitnuli has just revealed. The first plank is that we must recognize and plan for the reality that one size of kindergarten and primary school does not fit all children. Some children enter kindergarten with hours, thousands of hours of having had opportunities to listen to their parents read to them, to talk and to learn vocabulary, while the research documents that other children come to school with virtually no exposure to books. They don't know what's the front, what's the back, much less how to start beginning to read. Simply stated, if we're truly committed that all children will develop a level of reading proficiency by the end of grade three, then we must recognize that children who enter with less will need more to catch up, and that they will need that more in the early years rather than in the later years, so that we can address this problem in a preventive mode. Secondly, we must treat this problem of early reading delay, and I call it delay because the research has clearly documented that these children do not catch up unless something very, very intensive and urgent takes place in the early grades. We must treat these reading problems urgently, intensively, and preventively, rather than in a remedial fashion. When we find that they're in third grade or eighth grade or even 11th grade, that they're unable to negotiate the requirements of text and then are close to exiting school, whether with a degree or not. Learning trajectories, and this is something that was very, very hard to understand and to accept, but we know from the research that learning trajectories are established by the end of first grade. We can look at children's first grade reading proficiency, and we can make very reliable predictions about where children will be in fourth grade, in eighth grade, and in 12th grade. The data are very, very clear that if a child is a poor reader at the end of first grade, they have only a 0.12 probability of becoming an average reader by fourth grade. This is not due to lack of effort. It's just due to a lack of intensity and a lack of urgency of treating that problem. The data, as Ed indicated, we have measures that are quick, that are reliable, that we're currently using in schools to identify these children, but more importantly, we need resources to be able to work with these children to make sure that these trajectories are changed. The third piece that I'd like to mention about the importance of this bill is that reading instruction and changing reading outcomes for children is far more difficult than it appears to be. The requirements of establishing early identification systems and coupling that with early intervention systems at a school level is very, very complex, and sometimes the difficulties are underestimated. One principal who we work with in Roseburg schools has been involved in a project with us, and he said, "You never told me it would be this hard." He said, "I would do it all over again, but changing the way that schools operate and treating reading as priority and identifying and catching kids early is requires deliberate and intensive intervention."
You know, Bethel is not an anomaly. When you look at the number of children who are having difficulty in reading across the United States, approximately 40% of students are reading below the basic level. According to the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is the national report card, and Oregon participated in that, progress performance report, and it just, the 1998 results were just published last month. Oregon ranks 25th out of 39 states who participated in that national assessment. And what's interesting is that their performance in reading mirrors that of the nation. And if you look on average, the number of children who are below the basic level in the state of Oregon is identical to that of the nation. The fact that 39% of Oregon's fourth grade children fell in the below basic, meaning that they can't negotiate and work with grade level text, is a wake-up call and one that we are eager to continue pursuing and, with your support, are eager to make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the committee? Senator, I know you're trying to wrap this, so I'll be wrapping you. I have a question on this. It sounds exciting, and I think it meets the test of, as I know my colleague Senator Shannon talked about pilot training.
Okay.
It certainly fits that category. I guess one thing, I'll get this question. Where does the phonics fit into the whole thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan,
I wish I had an easy, quick answer to that, but phonics has so much historical baggage to it that it means different things to different people. But I think the research on this out of the National Academy of Sciences is very clear. We don't have a choice but to deal with a sound system in an alphabetic writing system. We do not have a choice. Phonics happens to be one way of getting at that. For example, more important than phonics in the early years in kindergarten and first grade, for example, is phonological awareness. Now, that's just a big word for just listening to sounds. It has nothing to do with print. So if kids can just listen to sounds and understand that words are made up of sounds, they'll have a better chance of being successful
if we read to them
and if we play with sounds with them and so on. So unfortunately, phonics is a clumsy way of trying to capture a scientific evidence that talks about reading in an alphabetic writing system. If we were to read in Chinese, we would not have, which is a logographic system, we would not have as big an issue, although we would still have some of those problems.
Okay, we hear a lot about Engelmann's work. We hear it constantly down here. What are you folks collaborating at all, or is that a separate entity at the university? And I understand universities too, and I understand it to be separate entities.
Siegfried Engelmann is a known name in Eugene as well, and his programs are highly effective. If you look at the research that's been done, students who participate in direct instruction programs clearly and consistently outperform children who don't. What we do in our models and our reading instruction is we rely on what the research indicates, and there's not a particular program or a particular package or set of materials that we recommend. What we do is we work with teachers, we educate them on what the research indicates is effective. We go in and we work with schools to identify what are the skills and strategies that all students should have as they exit kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and then we rely on the research to document this is the array of methods that are out there, this is the array of programs, and then we work with schools to help them identify programs that fit their schools. Because one of the things that we want them to make sure is that this is not just a one-year or a short-term solution or a quick fix, but that it's a system of support and an instructional support that will last over the long haul. So in order to make that work, we have to work with schools to identify programs that are compatible with those schools, but that also have an empirical basis and are effective based on rigorous research.
Mr. Chair, I did want to just commend the mayor.
Oh, you're really speeding right along.
Well, I know.
I'm
really impressed with the mayor.
Yes.
And all of you, excuse me, I didn't mean that, but we educators expect to do certain things. But anyhow, no. I really think that if people get out and do what you're doing, no matter what's happening, and really get involved, that can make a difference. And I'm convinced until we all get involved and all become participants, it really, nothing will happen. And I'm really, really impressed.
The senator is an important part of this committee. I hope you understand he was superintendent of public instruction for 15 years. That kind of
closes. That, Mr. Chairman.
Give the caveat. No.
Senator Hartung, Senator Duncan, I'm going to give you a gift, and hopefully I only have one of these. It cost me 12 and a half apiece. So is that within the limit of what you can accept?
I thought he was going to say it was the third grade, and I was superintendent.
No. I spent a day in Virginia watching them evaluate teachers to do their phonological awareness literacy screening that they do in every kindergarten in Virginia, and it's a multi-million dollar program. I'd like you to have this booklet. I think you might enjoy the reading, and if you wouldn't mind sharing it with the members of the committee.
I may. Senator George, and then Senator Shannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What time it was that I would walk back in here, because I had just run back to my office and called my wife and said, I want to know the name of that teacher that I was talking to about this program. And it turned out it's Mr. Engelman's program. amazing results. Would it be possible that sometime we could have, apparently there's two folks who do that work down there that have been training a few teachers to teach this. I'm sorry for my ignorance on this subject.
Yeah, the programs that are developed by Engelman, he has mathematics, reading, language, written language programs, and they actually, they have many, many people who are doing training across the nation to, in the state of Utah as just an example, but there are many. These programs are largely concentrated in certain areas of Texas. I mean, there's a very effective school and a high-risk and low-income school in Texas where they've gotten some pretty amazing results. But I don't know about his availability to come, and can't speak for him.
Well, I've shared a couple of incidents with the committee about these two teachers, one in Newport and one in Newburg, who have utilized this process. And I just leaned over and said to Senator Gordley that the one in Newport had told me that she said, I have taken children with an IQ of 70 and taught them to read proficiently. And I said to Senator Gordley, when you do that, their IQ is not 70 any longer. And one of the things that we tried to do here in this committee is to look at innovation. I mean, that's why we look to charter schools. Anything that we can get out here and find out what will work and then try to share that, you know, throughout the system to make it efficient. And so quite a coincidence we ended up this way today. And hopefully we can find out, you know, to have someone come down here. I know these two teachers. And I think I can make contact with them so we can arrange that in the future, have them come down and tell about their experiences.
Right, and we did have Mr. Engelman before the Engelman Committee in the summer.
Mr. Chair, during the early 70s, the Vistar was used throughout the state very much so. And kind of was critical of it, and it was just like, yeah, things we go in cycles.
Mm-hmm.
We're in new cycles.
It's understanding.
Well, I'm impressed that you want to use science-based proven records. I'm a little concerned when you were trying to make an excuse for phonics that didn't kind of have baggage. Because the only baggage I know from phonics is it works. It has a record of success.
Mm-hmm.
And I know California did look, see, look, memorize the word, mm-hmm. and found out after 17 years in 1994 their kids were the lowest readers in the nation, lower than Louisiana. And I hope... Sometimes, I'm speaking to the mayor, sometimes educators get caught up in these things, and I hope you keep them on track that the kids have a good exposure to phonics, because until they learn, and they know the sounds, but until they learn to decode them, they'll not learn to read, really to attack new words, unfamiliar words. And I just want to say one little thing. I'm a first grade teacher. My grandson is 7. And I was concerned because he wasn't learning to read in the first grade in Colorado, Boulder. And after my campaign last fall, I had an extra fax machine, and I sent it to him. And I have a phonics book, and I photocopy and fax some pages. And then on Sunday afternoons, we'd go through them. And the sounds, and then, you know, the ed, dead, med, ed, fed, med, red. So I'd make up some more and fax them. And you know that he's reading third grade books now. He says, Nana, listen to this. This book's got chapters. And he was doing that in February. And phonics works. And he's not, you know, the brightest kid. I'm doing it with a kindergarten kid. My mom babysat. And I think that it is so exciting for these children to read, but to play around with their minds and the people's money by not using a system that works
is almost criminal. So, Mayor, keep them on what works.
Katia's grandma is really interested. That's the key.
Oh, she gave him the tools.
Yep.
No.
Thank you, so let's deal.
I just wanted to thank all three of you for your testimony and just say that to my colleagues that I'm not at all surprised that our mayor of Eugene is one of the lead supporters.
Book and I photocopy and fax some pages. And then on Sunday afternoons, we go through them. And the sounds in them, you know, the Ed, Dead, Ned, Ted, Fed, Med, Red. And I'd make up some more and fax them. And you know that he's reading third grade books now. He says, man, I'll listen to this. This book's got chapters. And he was doing that in February. And phonics works. And he's not, you know, the brightest kid. I'm doing it with a kindergarten kid. My mom babysits. And I think that it is so exciting to teach children to read, but to play around with their minds and the people's money by not using a system that works is almost criminal. So, Mayor, keep them on what works.
Katia's grandma is really interested. That's the key.
Oh, she gave him the tools.
Yep.
No.
Thank you, sir.
I just wanted to thank all three of you for your testimony and just say that to my colleagues that I'm not at all surprised that our mayor of Eugene is one of the lead supporters of this and leading the charge. He's been involved in all kinds of levels of activity that try to address the needs of youth in our community, and it's just great to see you here and see you working on this bill. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Just really quickly, Mr. Senator.
Certainly. We were probably the first that, you know, had Dick and Jane and the Lick Say thing. And some of you are already aware of this, but it was a really sad experience to get to a four-year university and be a fraternity house and have a group of members of the Fresno State football team and people who had been immensely successful in high school in rooms in that fraternity house and us teaching ourselves phonics because the majority of those people could not read who had entered a four-year university with pretty good grades. And so that said something to me very strongly at the time. We didn't know what was wrong. We just knew that we were very poor readers. And it handicapped me my whole life, even though, because today it's still a mix of the two and trying to deal with it. Sometimes you guys will see me stumble on a word. Maybe what I'm trying to talk. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Representative Christie. Welcome to the committee. We haven't had you here for such a meeting yet. Nice to have you. I know you were here for most of the testimony from the three that preceded you, and that's pretty good. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Kitty Piercy from Health District 39, which includes Bethel School District, and I'm very proud of the work that the University from our community has done in combination with our school district, and wanted to come here and be supportive. It was interesting to hear the discussion that just went on because, indeed, I taught my daughter how to read with a DISTAR program because she was a child that had a lot of emotional problems, and I wanted to be sure she started out with as much in her arsenal as she could start out with. So I made an effort to take her through a program myself and armed her with reading so that she could then have something that she started out with that would help her when she had to deal with all the other things. So I do relate to this, and it has been around for a long time because that was in the mid-70s. So it's a good program along with some others. The most important thing to me about this that I just want to bring forward is the nothing that's new to any of you who spend all your time thinking about this, but, of course, keep building readers keeps kids in school. Keeping kids in school keeps them doing the right things instead of the wrong things and builds a future for them. And so I can hardly think of anything more important than us doing whatever we can to support that. I think this is a good demonstration project and maybe one that we'll be able to use in other places, and I hope that you will support it and do whatever you can to enable them to continue this work, and I appreciate you hearing them, and I'm just very proud of the work they're doing and proud of that school district. And that's all I just came to tell you. Thanks for listening, and I hope we'll be able to do something here because it does make a difference, as you all well know.
Thank you, Representative. Any comments or questions? Thank you very much.
And so, Carl Cole. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carl Cole. I'm the Director of Special Services for Bethel School District. I'm not going to echo the comments of the mayor and Dr. Simmons, Dr. Kim, Camille Miller, but I'd like to add just a few points to it. As Director of Special Ed and Special Services, which includes Special Ed in Bethel, we have a special education population of about 15-16% of our total student population. That's due in a large part to our high mobility rate and the socioeconomic status of our parents. Most of those kids are learning disabled. Most of those kids who are learning disabled are reading disabled. The referrals for reading disabilities occur towards the end of the second and third grade. When we get them at that point, the odds of making them effective readers is greatly diminished. With the project, working with Ed and Deb, we have the ability to identify those kids at an early age and apply effective instructional strategies. There's a lot of evidence in the research now in the literature that the majority of students who are identified as learning disabled in reading are in fact instructionally disabled. As an educator, that is a very, very important factor for me to realize that if we get to these kids soon enough, if we apply the appropriate instructional strategies, we can make a tremendous difference in their lives. And I'd like to maybe direct a little bit to Senator Shannon, the phonics issue. Ed and Deb are both very careful about the phonics whole language kind of controversy. We want to get past that and just talk about reading. But I can assure you this system, our programs are based in effective practices, and in the early grades that is a strong phonics base. Thank you very much.
Your questions, your comments? Thank you very much. Kent Hunsaker?
Well, Kent's coming up, I must say.
He's your cousin.
No, not really.
Okay.
But well over 30 years ago, I was a finalist and lost out to be the superintendent of schools in that district.
Okay.
And the comment was made to me at that time, I didn't have enough gray hairs. So I next time, Kent, I'm going to apply and see what happens and see if it works this time.
Now they would say that you have way too much hair.
Welcome to the committee, Kent. I know you've been before.
Thank you very much. Chair Hartung and members of the committee, it's a pleasure to you to come and to say a few comments about this program. First, I wanted to just start out and paint you a little picture of our district. I think it's probably a typical picture of a district across the state. We have 6 elementary schools, 2 middle schools, and a high school. Our 6 elementary schools have been kind of site-based, and that was a focus that we've had for some period of time. They chose their own reading materials. They developed good programs for kids that they thought, and we had people doing a whole variety of things that we hoped were effective. As we've looked at our data, we found out that they haven't been as effective as we wanted them to be. So a year and a half ago, we met with Ed Camianui and Deb Simmons and said, what might we do about this? And so they have been working with us for about a year and a half with our teachers. And what I can tell you is that the change in the system will be that we will be much more system-run and driven by a set of successful practices that come from the work of these fine people. And our teachers have bought into this. We've been doing training with them and working with them on the new things that we're going to do to really make interventions with kids at early ages effective. And our goal coming out of this is that 90% of our students, when they reach third grade, will be reading at third grade. And as we talk about the investment in education in the state, there's an argument about whether we're going to allocate, you know, somewhere between $4.5 and $5 billion to schools. And we look at this project as really the backbone of what we do, that we teach reading to kids. and that with that reading later on, they can be successful in a whole variety of other things. So we're looking at this as providing the foundation for the very things that we want to do later on. As you look at the cost of what we're looking for in support, it is a very small thing. And in fact, you could ask me a question, well, why aren't you going to do this anyway? And then my answer would be is that we're going to find a way to make this thing work. We're looking for some help here. If we don't get it, we're going to look for some help somewhere else. We're going to make this program work. But we feel like it's an appropriate investment because we think we have something in a practice that will come out of this that can offer something to other places. And I would encourage you to consider it, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
How have you found your teacher training and staff development? Have teachers accepted it enthusiastically and they're making it work? Because I believe, and you know, we've been here 14 weeks and it seems like everything we talk about, be it charter schools or Head Start, why, unless it's teacher driven or accepted, it's not going to work. How do you find this program in your district?
I've been to quite a few of the sessions where our teachers have been trained, and to be honest with you, we've had some difficulty in that arena bringing people on board, but as we've gone along, we've been successful. And if you were to go to our district now and talk to our K-3 teachers, you're going to see people that support this effort. And we are also, I wanted to, you know, complete the picture and say by the end of this, then we're now looking at materials that will support this program. So as Senator Shannon talked about, material to provide a strong phonics base in the early grades. So we will have consistent materials in our schools. It won't be a shotgun approach that's coming from all over the place. And that also facilitates training. If you have materials that have focus, then you can provide better training around that rather than to have, a shotgun approach. So I would say the training's gone very well, and these people could probably comment better because they've done it, and they've seen the change in our people's attitudes from the time we started till the end. The other thing I'd say is I think we're in a unique position at the end of this 2 years to actually provide some data to you that would say, is this program successful or not? In other words, we've been through the pre-work to do the training, to bring the people on board, to get the materials ready to go. Now we are implementing this program in schools, and at the end of that, you're going to be able to see the kinds of progress, and we're going to be able to identify the things that are working and changes that are going to need to be made.
So. I'm going to ask you a question without apology. It's a leading question, and I'll tell you why the question came to my mind. What you are telling us you are doing in reading, to me, is kind of the genius of the public charter school movement, where we're required to meet all of the standard requirements, but an opportunity for innovative things. Do you favor charter schools?
Chair Hartung, again, I favor approaches, and of course we have a unique charter school that I'd call a charter school in our district, as some of you may be aware of. We've approved a private alternative program that provides services to 520 homeschool students in the Eugene-Springfield area, and has about 70 homeschool students from the Bethel School District and about 450 from around the area that are attending this school. And I've watched this school do some amazing things and certainly support the work that they're doing, and we've worked with them in creating that program. I also think that that we need to encourage new looks at things. I think this is maybe it's a new old look is a better way to say it, because in many cases we're going back and we're looking at things that have been proven over time to work with kids. And so we're probably going back to some old kinds of practices that we know are going to be successful. I don't know if I answered your question correctly, but what I'm saying is, yes, I do support charter schools.
Thank you.
I do support the charter school bill as it has been approved. That's a personal thing, and so I can only comment on that. I'm very familiar with that, and at the same time, I also think that a key aspect of what we ought to do as we're looking at funding is to look at encouraging kinds of projects that may provide a roadmap for us to go down the road.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I was just wondering if you could talk to us a little bit more about how this funding would help you. How would you use the funding for the program? Because I know you're saying it is spelled out here a little bit, but I thought maybe you could just talk about that a little bit more for us to know.
Sure.
How it would help.
As we've looked at developing this, there's what we've recognized is that we need a variety of, as we identify kids that need intense intervention, that intervention is going to need to be provided by in small groups with trained people. And, you know, when you're dealing with a first grade class or a second grade class of 25 or more students, then that's very difficult for the teacher to facilitate that instruction. So this would then provide additional people that would work with these kids that need this intervention. In addition to that, and you won't find this in there, we are also through district funds going to provide intensive intervention for students during the summertime. We are committed to attacking this problem year round. In fact, we don't think that you can do it in the 180 days that we have with kids, that you're going to have to look at other kinds of interventions where you're extending that time. So we're committing to that piece. We're asking for the extra adult help to really make this program work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Certainly, George. You mentioned the old new way, or the new old way, and one of the things that I found really intriguing, many years ago, I had a chance to have a discussion with my dad and a good friend of his. They had been educated in the late teens and the early 20s. And when it came to mathematics, they did a lot of drills back then. They were absolutely amazing. To give you an example, this one friend of mine, they loaded a train load of cattle, and the guy was calling off the numbers. And this is a person that had graduated from the eighth grade. When the train load of cattle were done, he gave you the exact total an hour before the person with the calculator, which at that time would have been an old machine like this. The thing was that I found them absolutely amazing. Is there any record of how they did that? Is there any old training manuals for teachers or anything? I found that, I think this would have been reflective of most of those people back at that period of time. Just amazing ability with mathematics.
Chair Hartung, Senator George, in specifically the things that you're talking about, I really can't comment to. Maybe I can go back. I'm a math teacher myself. That's where I'm trained. Just like my dad taught me how to multiply numbers that end in 5, and they're the same. So 25 times 25 is 625, and 35 times 35 is 1,225, and 95 times 95 is 9,025. I know all those. So how do I know that? Because my dad taught me a special way to do it. So there.
By the way, his father was one of the grand old about 40 years.
So as you look at that, you know, the way I've looked back on those things is as we make connections that are meaningful, we recall those. And so learning that takes place in the form of special context to us stays with us. And we've seen that over a period of time, and we can all probably relate to that. Is you remember things, they were special to you in some ways. So the people that taught the folks to do that, that's the way they did it, so that they could remember it and they taught it in a context that was meaningful to them.
Could I just one further? Certainly, while we had this opportunity, one of the things I found amazing is because of the fact that they understood how numbers form together instead of form other numbers, they had an amazing perspective of how these numbers would fit, and they were able to apparently organize it in their mind on the basis of the fact that they saw the numbers. So today I see so many young people, and you'll say to them, in fact, you'll see them interviewed on television, and they'll talk about $5 and $5 million like there was a short distance between them. Amazing, not that it is a short distance. But they had a tremendous perspective of how the numbers fit together. Do you have any thoughts about that as to why are we losing that with the young people? They can't seem to identify, you know, a foot is this much and a mile is that much and 1,000 miles is something else. The measurements seem to be lost in their thought process. It doesn't have an orderly assembly.
Again, Senator George, what I'd say again, this comes from my math background, that measurement has always been difficult for many people. And it has a lot to do with how much you use measurement. Mm-hmm. So as you talk about mathematics in general, how do people in their daily lives come across the use of measurement so that it reinforces skills that you get in school? And the answer to that is that not very much. So what's your, when's the last time that you used the metric system yourself? When is the last time you, in your daily life, converted feet to yards to miles to whatever? And that needs to be a part of the learning situation. We provide opportunities for that are meaningful to kids, even at home, to reinforce those kinds of skills. And I think that's a part of the challenge in the classroom is also to make those same connections and to make them meaningful.
Thank you. Commissioner?
Well, I just saw the bill. $773,000. I have some questions. Don't you have reading specialists in your school district now?
We have Title I reading specialists that operate in some of our schools. In Title I schools, we have Title I specialists that work with a variety of students that are not performing. Maybe the difference here is, again, this is a systemic change. We're providing support for students that are having reading difficulties with special ed teachers, with title teachers. What we're saying here is that we want to test something new that provides systemic support for all kids in a whole variety of ways. And that if we're successful with this, it has, even though it's $770,000, and I believe that's over
3 years.
So it's over 3 years.
Mm-hmm. No, 4 years.
4 years. So if maybe a better way to look at that is over the next biennium, that would be half of that, so $385,000, and I don't know how much that, but I would look at that in a district our size and across the state if we were to be successful, and then we were to talk about $4.5 billion or $4.7 or $5 billion, and if that would add to that investment is a good investment.
Well, I something little red flag went off when you said how you're going to teach this through, and the kids saying, well, we're going to do these other things, and we're going to do this in the summer, and that, you know, and I had the understanding you're going to do one thing. You're going in there, and you're going to teach these kids how to read for life. And in the first place, if I was a superintendent, I wouldn't hire a first grade teacher. She didn't know how to teach kids how to read. And if I didn't keep track of her and saw that the kids coming out of her class could teach kids how to read, I mean, like if they were readers. And it looks like we're putting up a third level, and I don't know how much we can afford. I mean, I think that we should, I said, I was a first grade teacher. I took teaching read to class, teaching children to read in college. I think I took three of them. And some of them are reading specialists. But if you want these people so that there's only 20 kids in a classroom, I can understand it. But I think the first teacher should be doing the job.
Well, Senator Shannon and...
what are you going to do in the summer?
Okay. Actually, and you've heard the people talk about the program a little bit, is that what we've done is we've come up with an assessment system that identifies students at a very early age. We're identifying kindergarten students that would be behind right now. Our kindergarten program has in the past been very developmental. It has not had a focus on reading. It has more been a focus on social development. We're changing that focus now as we speak, and we've got people to buy into that. We expect to start early on with these students, but again, as we talk about interventions, it is not a matter of that teacher taking the number of kids that we have with all the things that they're supposed to do and saying you're responsible for that and only that. The reality is they need help. And if we're going to do this right in our system, we believe that we have to provide help. Now, we're providing it with our special services programs. We're providing it with some Title I assistance in some schools, but we don't have that in all schools. And this would provide it to a higher extent from the very beginnings all the way through third grade. And I think I don't want to be critical of what you're saying in any way, but I think it's too simplified to say we expect the teachers that have 25 kids in their class to make sure that everybody reads. I'd like to be able to buy that too. If you want to talk with one of those teachers, they'll tell you that given the spectrum of kids that comes into their class, given the differences of ability that they have and all the things that they're to do, that that is easier said than done, and that if we want to really attack this problem, we need to provide some resources to actually get it.
Okay, but what's these other things you're going to do? What are you going to do in the summer?
The same thing. We're, you know, the idea here is that we would provide, as students get are not up to grade level, that we would provide enhanced instruction throughout the summer to extend that.
All focused on reading?
It's focused on their issues. In this case, it will be definitely focused on reading. And the idea is, of course, we know what happens during the summer with lots of kids. We move them along, and then they're out of school for 2.5 months, and then we bring them back. And so guess what's happened between the time that they left and the time that they're back? They've digressed a little bit because they haven't been taught for 2.5 months. And so now what we're saying is that we're going to add another 6 weeks of instruction to that, and that we're going to try and fill in that gap and improve those things.
To be academically focused?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments?
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. And now if we could please have Wilma and Anita McClanahan.
Members, while we're all here, we are meeting this Friday, and we're going to put over some of these things that we had scheduled for today, and we'll do them Friday. We appreciate it. You all could be here promptly at 1, and we'll get out of here promptly at 3. Senator Courtney?
Just so you know, on Friday, I'm sharing this year's committee starting at 1 and going to 5 and dealing with 12 bills.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Thank you. Appreciate that news. Gary George, will be farming on Friday?
Well, I'd like to, but if you say to be here, I'll be here.
Okay, we'll talk about that. We'll see what we have to do on Friday and if four votes are available. Welcome, ladies, to the committee.
I think the president has some for me that
Friday. Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Hartung and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Anita McClanahan, Director of Early Childhood Programs from the Department of Education. And the things that you've been listening to this afternoon are very exciting indeed, and we are all truly concerned about our children and their ability to read and how they access reading in the early years. And you certainly know that our superintendent, Stan Bunn, has made reading a number one priority for him, and he has said that will remain as long as he is in the Department of Education, that reading will be one of his largest priorities. And as was mentioned earlier, he did convene a reading summit, and we did have him present what his initiative is around that area. So when I say to you this afternoon that I'm here not to support this bill, you're probably all going to fall off your seats, especially my colleagues behind me, but I'd like to explain our stand on this particular bill. First, I'd like to really clarify that we as a department support all of the concepts around reading readiness, research, and pilot projects. And we are very aware of our need for these things in our state. What we would like to suggest is that we have the establishment of a resource fund or a pool of resources for these very kinds of things, for pilot projects, for looking at innovative means and methods related to the development of reading and the success of our children. What we believe is that this bill singles out a single site, and that there are other sites across the state that may have other research projects that would be equally informing and valuable for the diversity of the students which we serve or with whom we need to work. And we feel that a pool of resource funds for research would be equitable and could provide multiple insights for improving strategies around the teaching of reading. It's not that we don't agree with this in concept to do research, but we're thinking that because it singles out a single site, and we would like to see the opportunity for more schools and more districts to take advantage of research opportunities, that we would suggest a resource pool whereby schools could apply to the department based on criteria that would be established for these kinds of projects. Thank you.
Thank you. Wilma, would you please testify?
And I want to say we'll probably hold questions for you. I have a teacher took a day off on another bill we want to get to, and we'll be back this bill on a public hearing and possible work session, so we may call on you again.
Thank you,
sir. Wilma, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hartung and members of the committee. I'm a little hesitant to speak since I can't compete with your other professors and the like, but I have taught reading at Willamette University. I have taught first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade reading, so I have some background there. I have a sister who was a special education teacher. She said the only way she could teach some kids to read was with DSTAR. I also found, although I do realize that Senator Shannon would not agree with me, that there are some children who read who do not understand phonics, but who can still read, and I was one of those. Whereas our organization objects to categorical funding, I feel like we should support. And members of the committee. I'm a little hesitant to speak since I can't compete with your other professors and the like, but I have taught reading at Willamette University. I have taught first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade reading, so I have some background there. I have a sister who was a special education teacher. She said the only way she could teach some kids to read was with DSTAR. I also found, although I do realize that Senator Shannon would not agree with me, that there are some children who read who do not understand phonics, but who can still read, and I was one of those. Whereas our organization objects to categorical funding, I feel like we should support a program. If we're going to support a program, it would be a good thing to have money available for pilot programs in different parts of the state that use different methods of reading, because what works in one district and works extremely well in Bethel and Eugene, and I've heard some speakers talk about that, might not work so well in Bird River or Hackley. Thank you.
Thank you. If you don't mind, we will bring you back. And so I will. Is there anyone else that came here specifically to testify on Senate Bill 1091? Not we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 1091 and open the hearing on Senate Bill 100. John Bain, Judith Holsinger, Virgie Lorenz, and Trisha Bosick, do you all want to come up at the same time? Welcome to the committee, and we are hearing Senate Bill 1000.
Senator, you said Senate Bill 100. I thought we were back in... scared me. Senator Hartung, members of the committee, I'm Trisha Bozak with the Oregon Education Association, and we're here today to support Senate Bill 1000. I'm here with three teachers who have been affected by or in a situation who could be affected by the focus of this bill. The need for the bill arose from the recent transfer of the educational programs at the Hillcrest and McLaren schools from the responsibility of the Department of Education to an education service district. The result was the displacement of a number of long-term employees. In some cases, it meant loss of sick leave and seniority. In some cases, it meant the loss of employment itself. Our view is that employment status shouldn't be jeopardized just because the administrative responsibility for a program changes from one entity to another. So that's why we're here today. I wanted to point out, I forgot to give Karen my written testimony. I wanted to point out at least three current statutes that deal with the transfer of administrative responsibility where employees aren't adversely affected. The first one of those is the Public Employee Transfer Law, which basically says when duties are transferred from one public employer to another that the employees basically follow the work. School districts, however, are excluded from that law. The second one, though, is the most common reorganization that affects school employees, and that is merger and consolidation of school districts, and that law at the bottom of the front page of my testimony, you can see the language in the merger and consolidation law that says no school district employees shall be deprived of seniority or accumulated sick leave solely because the duties of that employee have been assumed by another school district. So that very school district-specific legislation embodies the same policy that is found in the public employee transfer law. What we would seek to do in Senate Bill 1000 is to amend the special education program reorganization law, which too has language in it that is along these lines. What we would seek to do is just change the definition of school district to include, that would include not only school districts, but ESDs and state-operated schools, such as Hillcrest School Land. The bill also extends this protection retroactively to the Hillcrest and McLaren teachers. We feel like Senate Bill 1000 is a fair application of what already exists, policy that already exists in Oregon law when program transfer situations arise. We believe we should let the employee follow the work regardless of whichever employer takes the administrative responsibility for that same program. And that way, that provides kind of a seamless transition of not only the program, but also the employees in those jobs. Senator Hartung, if you wouldn't mind, I would like to kind of turn it over to some of the teachers so they could explain the situation that they have experienced along these lines.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chairman Hartung and members of the committee, my name is Virgie Lorenz. And I was employed for 3.5 years at Hillcrest in the Robert S. Earl High School on the campus there for juvenile offenders. And I taught language arts social studies to high school students in grades 9 through 12. Prior to hire at Hillcrest, I substituted a couple of summers in the language arts program at Hillcrest and various other programs in the school. I have a bachelor's plus a master's in English and a standard teaching certificate for grades 6 through 12. The issue that is being discussed as presented by Mrs. Bozak is the need for legislation to fill in a loophole that was created by the existing merger, consolidation, and transfer laws. And when I was initially employed at Hillcrest, I had the opportunity to participate in the smooth, non-disruptive transition as the teaching program was transferred from Children's Services Division to the Oregon Department of Ed. We went to work one day as CSB employees, and we went to work the next day as ODE employees. And since all staff remained the same, there was no disruption in the services nor unsettling changes for the students that we serve. The merger, consolidation, and transfer laws were created to govern the transfer programs within the state and public school organizations to make transfers smooth, non-disruptive, and fair to all parties concerned. These laws ensure that arbitrary decisions cannot be made by those in control as to who or what goes or stays. When the Oregon Department of Ed decided to contract out programs to Hillcrest and contract out the programs at Hillcrest and McLaren, they had the opportunity and the means to transfer successfully functioning programs and instructors together to the receiving party, Willamette ESD, complete and whole. I personally believe that the reason this did not happen was created because of an adversarial relationship that had developed between ODE and some of the teachers at McLaren and Hillcrest. Well-constructed laws take away personality and personal issues and allow things to happen in a fair and an objective manner. I loved my job. I enjoyed the time I spent with faculty and students at Robert S. Farrell High School. I enjoyed working with that particular population of students. I was a valuable potential employee for Willamette ESB because of the experience and training I had in corrections, in the corrections program, of which they had no experience. When we were put in the position of reapplying for our jobs, which we should not have had to go through, I had every reason to expect that I was a valuable employee and would be rehired.
Yes, I miss it. With the transfer, you had to reapply?
Yes, we were asked to reapply for our jobs with Willamette ESD.
Oh,
we wanted
Willamette ESD. Okay.
When I was not hired, I was hurt and devastated. The biggest hurt was the blow to my self-esteem. I knew that I was well-liked by students and the faculty and by those in the Oregon Youth Authority that I worked with there on the campus with regards to the students. On a Friday afternoon, August 21st, 1998, my supervisor informed me that I had not passed my interview. This was the same supervisor that had observed my classroom performance on two separate occasions, giving me reviews of meets expectations and exceeds expectations. And it was the same supervisor who had complimented me on the calming influence I could bring to troublesome situations. If the loophole in the law had not existed, no one could have arbitrarily decided that I should not be able to keep a job that I excelled at. Because of the late date in the summer at which I was terminated, I did not have any chance of finding a position in the public school system. The following Monday after I had received notice, I called 11 different schools and districts that I had taught in or had experience with before and received the same answer at every one, that they had filled all their language arts positions for the coming school year. Because I was successfully fulfilling the terms of my employment, I had no reason not to believe that I would be able to remain at the position that I had been hired to until retirement age of 55, which is the age those under police and fire benefits can retire. This was particularly desirable to me because I didn't start working in a retirement system until age 45. If the loophole in the law had not existed, no one could have taken control of my retirement, my insurance benefits, or robbed me of the positive associations I enjoyed at my workplace. I am currently working in corrections through Chemeketa Community College at Oregon State Correctional Institute as a half-time instructor. When my husband retires at the end of this year from the state of Oregon, we will not have full insurance coverage through my employment, but only half. If I were with Willamette ESD, as I should be, I would have been able to take over the coverage of our family. The reduction in salary greatly affects retirement plans as we look to having two children in college this fall and one in high school. If the loophole in the law had not existed, I could have transitioned just as smoothly from ODE to Willamette ESD as I did from CSE to ODE. The bill before you makes transfers of programs within the state and public school systems equitable in all situations. I may not have the opportunity to benefit from it myself, but there will be others out there doing their job and looking forward to rewarding and successful careers as teachers. This bill will keep them from becoming victims of the circumstances I and those in the Clarendon and Hillcrest who lost our positions were victims of. And I really hope that you will give this bill your support.
Thank you very much. If you just remain there a minute, I need to recess this public hearing on Senate Bill 100 and open the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 236A, the engrossed bill. Senator Courtney.
Mr. Chair, this is a bill that we sent to the floor. This is Elaine Shadley's bill about having to remove a school board member, the Dallas School Board. You remember we had a problem, but we tacked a little amendment to it. And that amendment created a, I don't want to say firestorm, but it caused some disruption. So we brought it back from the Senate floor here. There are new amendments in front of you. You need to go to your B engrossed House bill. You need to go to the B engrossed House bill. And the new amendments are B-5. They should be, they were handed out by Jane, and they're connected to the sheet. And it's very descriptive of what they do. They still allow a good portion of the amendment that we added, but they qualify it, if you know what I mean. And it speaks for itself. Other than they have to read the whole amendment, it qualifies it. So we do allow the amendment to remain in part, but we qualify it. And it's my understanding that the parties involved, all the parties involved, and I'm getting nods in the head from all the players,
and you can see the heads nodding.
Yes.
Do support B5. So there's three key heads out there. So I would like to move the B5 amendments to House Bill 2386. I guess I'd say B and Gross, or maybe just House Bill 2. I'll make sure I make it.
B and Gross.
B and Gross.
Go ahead and make your amendments, and I'm going to reconsider the vote.
Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me. I move to reconsider the vote by which we pass House Bill 2386, B and Gross, to the Senate floor. That's my motion.
Senator Courtney moves that we reconsider the vote by which we pass the B and Gross House Bill 2386. Is there discussion?
A little. Oh, no. Go ahead.
Okay. Do we need to vote on that?
No, you don't need to vote.
Okay. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we are reconsidering the B and Gross bill. And Senator Courtney.
I now move the B5 amendments to House Bill 2386 B and Gross.
Senator Courtney moves the dash five amendments to the B and Gross House Bill 2386. Is there a discussion?
These amendments?
Yeah, we're talking about the amendments.
I was looking for something here. Well, it's my understanding that the people that offered the amendments, I just want a full explanation from them, and they assured me that it had nothing to do with labor contracts. It could never be interpreted that way. Because it said that I suppose the amendment wouldn't hurt, but when it was read to me.
Senator Courtney, could you address that question?
Yeah.
Well, the other way, it's just clear, all this does, Senator Shannon, and their representatives in the audience who've agreed to this amendment, is it just specifically clarifies what they told you.
I know, I just wanted to make sure that the integrity of the person that offered the amendment is pure and intentions were not to be anything tricky, that everybody knows. It was just interpreted a funny way because his integrity is important.
I didn't say, nor would I suggest anything about his integrity. There's no integrity issues before us. We're just talking about something that people. What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Hey, enough. Senator Gordley.
Was there testimony at the previous hearing from the Oregon School Boards Association? Do they have a position on this bill?
I think so.
They offered the amendment.
John Marshall, speaking, said that they did.
Okay.
And they agreed to the amendment.
All right.
Well, the new one.
I wasn't present, so I'm just trying to get some background information.
Is there further discussion? Is there any objection to the adoption of the amendment? Seeing none. So Senator Courtney moves the
2386 as amended, the Ingrows as amended, before the pass recommendation.
You heard the motion. Is there discussion? The clerk will call on the roll.
Senator Duncan?
Aye.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Piquillo?
Aye.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Harkin?
Aye. Motion is passed. Senator Courtney will carry the bill, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2386 and reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 1000. Who's the interruption?
Senator Hartung and committee members, my name is John Bain. I taught at Hillcrest for 10 years. I'm currently teaching at Central High School in the Monmouth Independent District, Central School District. First, I'd like to comment on what an interesting, wonderful job you guys have. I can hardly wait to come back to my students and tell them. College professors, mayors, school teachers, it seems to be a nice job. I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself, and then I'll make four quick points. I come from a family of educators. My wife is career guidance counselor at Lynn Benton Community College. I do have five children. Probably what I'm most proud of is my daughter, who will be 22 soon, is elected to become a special education teacher like myself. I am a special education teacher. I also have certification in counseling, and I also have certification in language arts social studies. Equally as proud of my daughter is my son, who is elected to become a social studies teacher. Now, the other three kids, I don't know what they're going to do, but I am happy that two of my kids are following me and my wife into education. I really am. I'm proud of them.
Great.
I'm here mainly to appeal to you and to talk to you about fairness and just equal application of things and the state of Oregon as an employer. In general, I think the state of Oregon has a fair reputation treatment of its employees. In general, I think there's some protections for employees when agencies transfer. You folks have legislated some protection for employees when there are transfers of agencies that there isn't going to be harm to long-term employees who've committed their livelihood, their careers to the state, and they've had successful experiences, one year after another, successful satisfactory performance evaluations. Likewise, school mergers. There's been mergers of schools throughout the state in the last 10, 12 years, and they've been done sensitively by the oversight of the Oregon legislature through the school merger act. And there's a small group of teachers who work at schools for the deaf, the blind, McLaren, and Hillcrest who were neglected protection under those laws because we were neither moving from a school district to a school district, and we were neither moving from a state agency to a state agency, so we were excluded. So management had certain rights in that situation to interview. That's what too they wanted. And from my personal experience, what I observed, I saw 60 teachers apply, but 14 of them not be selected by the Willamette ESD. And some of these folks have worked for 27 years. Three of them are 61 years old and older. And there were no laws governing the Willamette ESD and the selection. They were operating under the existing law. I don't believe necessarily they broke a law. They had 400 employees themselves, many of them specialists. We were a small unit of 60 people. Same classroom, same students, same school building. On August 31st, changed employees in those rooms on September 1st. And 14 people were harmed. And I'm here to speak on behalf of those 14 people and to appeal to you folks to look closely at this piece of legislation and not neglect those teachers at Hillcrest, McLaren, and what remains at teachers for the deaf and blind. And I'm more than willing to answer any questions that you might have. I can hardly resist commenting on the earlier part. I do want to say 22 years teaching special education. I really enjoyed the morning here, or the first part of the session here today. I mean, it really was stimulating. I believe in early intervention, and you know, I think you guys are doing have a good job to listen to stuff.
Thank you very much.
My name is Judith Holzinger. I have taught for 20 years at the Oregon School for the Deaf. I teach science and health to grades 5, 6, 7, and 8. I am also the president of the Teachers Association. We are now, we're called the State Teachers Education Association. And those that are in that unit now are the teachers of the School for the Deaf and the School for the Blind. And we're looking anxiously at this bill because we don't want to see what happened to our colleagues at Hillcrest and McLaren possibly happen to us because we seem to have fallen through the cracks. All of the other teachers in who are in school districts are have the protections and the rights, and it's kind of scary. And basically, that's just the message that I need to bring to you from the teachers at the school. They are very anxious. We're real happy with Mr. Bunn. He seems to be very positive. But what happens if, you know, if and when he moves on? Will we still have that positive, you know, assistance and support? We don't know. You never know how the cycles are going to go. And we just think that it should be set up so that even though we at the schools act as if we are our own school district, whenever there's something that school districts have to do, especially at school improvement plans, we do it because we behave that way as if we are our own district. We would just like to have that made official.
Good, thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Questions or comments from the members? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 1000? Seeing none. And, Tricia, thank you for bringing the people. It was excellent testimony.
I'd like to thank the committee for taking time to allow us to come and testify.
Certainly. Those are very important. So I'll adjourn the public hearing on Senate Bill 1000. Is there any other business to come before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned. And on Friday, if...